This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hi, I'm Bex.
And I'm Laura.
And we're here to talk openly and honestly about miscarriage, stillbirth, and all pregnancy loss.
We aim to smash the taboo surrounding these subjects.
And rebuild the topic in a way to support and educate women.
Rather than isolate and shame them.
Welcome
to the worst girl gang
ever. Welcome to this week's episode of The Worst Girl Gang Ever. We are so excited to be joined by one of our Worst Girl Gang Ever award winners.
Whoop, whoop.
Oh, whoop, yeah. Whoop.
Becky Kearns, aka Defining Mum. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for the awards as well. And I've got it right here next to me on my desk when I'm speaking to you.
It's a bit flash, isn't it?
It's lovely.
Yeah.
Fancy schmancy.
Yeah, we're really pleased with them. But you're, I mean, it's so deserving. So deserving.
Thank you. I couldn't believe, well, firstly, I couldn't believe it when I'd been nominated and it popped up on Instagram, and then obviously to win it. And obviously you couldn't have the award ceremony like you wanted to, which was a bit of a shame. But yeah, I think it's a great thing to recognise the work that sometimes goes on that isn't shouted about. And thank you.
It's one of those ones, because I think being in this community ourselves, and obviously being, as you are, kind of a voice and a presence, we understand how much actually does go into making yourself heard above everyone else. And it is a full-time job. I mean, it should be a full-time job. But I think, like so many of us, we're flying by the seat of our pants, pissing our other halves off in the evenings with our laptops. Yes. And trying to survive, trying to tread water, really. And there's two of us and there's only one of you. So it's just... Yeah, it's all about just keeping your head above the water whilst trying to help other people, isn't it?
It is. And it's just all about finding your way as well, because I don't know about you, but when I first started doing what I was doing, I had no idea what to do or how to raise my voice. And it is, you just learn, and you spend hours and hours connecting with people and collaborating with people and trying to work out how best to share what you want to share. And it does, it takes over your life. I mean, I would think about it most of the time at the beginning, and I'd be thinking, right, okay, what can I do next, and how can I get that message across? And I think my husband has been quite annoyed at my level of phone use over the last 3 years, but I feel like I'm getting better now. I'm better at balance, so
we're better as well. At the beginning we spent more time talking to each other than we did our husbands. They got
true,
the right hump.
True story. They did. I'm actually quite surprised that both our relationships are still going.
Impact,
ours as well, mine and yours, because we kind of it's been, you know, we've had our blowouts, haven't we, but
well,
we kiss and make up at the end, it's all good.
And so Becky, got each other.
I mean, that's been a saver for us, isn't it? It's the fact that when one of us is down, usually the other one isn't, and the other one can pull the other one out.
Because not only are we sort of all of us like campaigning, raising awareness, all of those sorts of things, we're also supporting people who are going through it, and that's heavy, isn't it? So to be able to, for us to be able to do it together, is good. Do you have a good support network around you, Becky?
Yes, I do now, and all people I've met through Instagram, so as in they know kind of how it feels and the things and the struggles, and I've got people all over the world who I chat to about it, because it's quite a unique experience, I think. Yeah, particularly donor conception, which I'm sure we'll get into soon.
Yes. So as I was going to say, would you start us? So you've been running Defining Mum for 3 years, you said.
Yes. So it was 2018 when I first started. Yeah.
Brilliant. And talk us through that. How did it start, and why are you here? What brought you here?
So I all the way through my fertility journey, I had this urge to share it and write about it, but didn't really know how, and I wasn't really in the right emotional space. And it was after I have three girls now, and my twins were 6 months old, so I was on maternity leave, And I've been talking about it with my friends for so long about, look, I just feel like I want to talk about it. I want to share this. And I don't know how. And I think one of my friends got sick of me saying it and not actually doing anything with it and built me a little website and said, here you go.
That's a good friend now.
Yeah.
Massive kick up the ass. That's what we all need from our friends.
Yeah. She was like, I believe in you. Off you go and do it. And I remember sitting with my husband in a pub thinking, I need a name for this. And I was like going through all the different like acronyms, IVF and all these things. And suddenly my husband actually said, well, you're kind of like talking about how you've redefined what it means to be a mum. So what about defining mum? And I was like, that is it. That's exactly what I'm trying to do. And that's exactly what I've done. And I think once I'd got the name, I was able to then start writing and sharing. And I remember that first time where I properly shared my story. And even though I've been quite open with friends and family, it was that whole putting it on Facebook that was the scary thing and saying, look, I've done a blog, come and share. And it's all those people that you've been to school with, you've worked with in the past and who know you but don't know you now.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like coming out really. And I remember kind of just thinking, I don't know how this is going to go. It may fall flat and I think I'll probably be bored in a couple of months. But it just completely took off. I had people contacting me and the feeling I had when someone was saying, yes, you've said how I've been feeling but haven't been able to voice it. It was just like the most rewarding feeling ever. So I just became completely driven by this need to share what I'd been through and all the different feelings that come along with it. And it just inspired me to keep sharing. So I literally started to say to people, look, you can become a mom in a different way to what you originally imagined. But then it's evolved into talking about sort of how I feel as a parent now through donor conception. And it was just realizing that when I was going through it, I didn't know anybody else out there who, I mean, I met somebody through a NetMums forum of all places who had a little boy through egg donation. And that was a massive turning point for me because I was able to visualize it and see their reality. And that made it more kind of easy to digest and to think about.
Instead for that, isn't there, having people who've been through or are going through the same experiences, otherwise it's so lonely.
The power of identification is so like underestimated, I think, and so unbelievably powerful, not just in this, I mean particularly in this, but in so many areas of life. When you feel like you're on your own, you find someone that sort of talks your language.
Yeah.
I think we wrote a post about it. It's like being in a room full of foreign people and then you find that one person and suddenly you're not alone anymore.
Yeah.
That one person that speaks the same language as you, that has, it doesn't even have to be the same experience, but enough shared experience to be able to communicate with you effectively. It's just such a relief, isn't it? It's such a, it's so liberating.
It is. And it's that whole feeling of validation, isn't it, as well? Absolutely. That everything I've been feeling is normal and I'm not the only one to feel like this. And that's kind of where I wanted to position myself, to say to people, look, it's okay if you're struggling with this. And also not only doing that, but also to give hope as well to people that actually you can be happy. And I share my girls and I share our relationship. And I think it has helped people to get past some of those blockers to thinking about those different paths to parenthood, but also to be really honest about the bits that are still hard and difficult and things we have to think about. And I've been on this whole journey in the last 3 years where there's a whole community of donor conceived people who I'd never heard before I went on this path. And they brought up some really difficult things that I've had to then think, oh, okay, maybe I change my view on that now, or I've seen it from a different perspective. And I'm trying to almost share those reflections as well on this path. So it's very complex and so much more complex than you would think at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so, I found that so much, Becky, that this whole community, this whole subject, this whole topic that we cover in this community is so much more complex than you are led to believe before you're inside it. And that you realized before you join it. It's you know, that apart from anything else, the emotions that any one of these topics encompasses are just like a complete spectrum, aren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think I really struggle with the fact that when you're looking at using a donor to grow your family, quite often when you're with the fertility clinic, it's kind of given as another medical option. It's just like, oh, well, you could use someone else's eggs. Almost like it's an extension to IVF, like kind of a, you can just take this slight detour around when actually what I've discovered later down the line is it's not that, it's a whole new path to parenthood. Yeah. And I was just listening to your conversation with Not a Fictional Mum earlier this morning, and there are lots of parallels in there with adoption, although it's different. And yet there is, I mean, you think about all of the hoops you have to go through to adopt and to think about it, it makes you, forces you to consider the implications and what, how you're going to support your child and everything else. And you go down the donor conception route and you typically get one mandatory counselling session, which I didn't even get because we decided to go abroad before we got to the top of the list in the UK. So it was, that's kind of where I've evolved to as well in terms of trying to share that information and things that I wish I'd have known, because like you say, it is so complex. And I mean, I could write a whole book on it and I would love to one day.
Do it.
Yeah, I just need to find the time. But yeah, I'd love to one day because it's huge. It is huge.
Yeah. And I guess like the emotional stuff behind it is something that you might be completely floored by when you say, as you say, in the fertility clinics, when people are, when you're treated by medical professionals and everything seems so black and white and so information-based, that actually when you hit the stark reality of the emotions behind it, you might be completely floored and not know your ass from your elbow in terms of why you're feeling the way you're feeling, or whether that is normal, or you know, whether you're having an adverse reaction to what's going on. Or that must be incredibly difficult to navigate, especially because you're doing it alongside your partner, who I imagine won't have the same feelings as you.
Yeah, it is. And there's no guidebook out there for it, and everyone will be different. But I remember when we first started considering the thought of donor eggs, I was more open to it than my husband at the time. And I remember this conversation we had in the kitchen, and he was like, well, I don't know whether I'm ever going to be okay with this. It just feels so weird, and the thought of it. And you go from that very initial feeling of, oh my goodness, that's like some other woman's eggs being mixed with my husband's sperm, and then I would carry the baby, and it feels so alien. So then you talk to people, you understand a bit more, and you grieve and you accept as well, because it's a whole grieving process. You've got to like let go of that image of the child that you've always had. I always imagined I'd have like a little mini me. I'm so like my mum, and everyone's always commented throughout life that, oh my goodness, you two are just so alike in looks and the way we act. And so I'd always had this image in my mind from being a little girl that I would have a mini version of me in some way. So, and I think a lot of people struggle with that because they think they're being vain by thinking they want another version of themselves. But I think it's perfectly natural to imagine that and to think about that and to look at your child and see yourself in some way and things reflecting back. So to have to then accept that your genetics aren't going to play a part in that is a huge thing. But then there's also that you start to realize all of the other ways that you can influence them and help, well, when you're carrying them through epigenetics and then as you're nurturing them right from the very beginning, my girls don't necessarily look like me, but I get lots of comments that they're like me, and we smile in the same way. And I think that's through mirroring and the way they've picked that up. And I can hear myself back when my eldest speaks to me. Oh my God. I think it's a bit about expanding your mind and allowing yourself to kind of think differently about it. It's redefining mum. And what does that mean? So
that's why it's so important, everything that you're doing, and that's why, you know, people recognize all the work that you're doing, because like you say, one genetic counseling session, if that, is not enough.
No, not for all the trauma that you've been through on the road up to it. I mean, I feel that a lot of people, I mean, donor conception is used in many different circumstances, so the LGBTQ community, that is their route to parenthood. If you're in a heterosexual couple and you are going through fertility struggles, that it's a very similar kind of thought and feeling around it, but it comes at you in a different way. You don't necessarily see it coming. You've not known that you've got to use a donor for a while, and then that's how you're going to build your family. Suddenly you have to shift, and you've got to think about this. And I mean, donor conception has been around for a while now, not talked about, But historically, it's been very much under secrecy and lots of shame around it. And, yeah. and doctors used to tell people sort of 10, 15, 20 years ago, there's no need to tell. You can just
oh, wow.
carry on as normal. And this is where you hear from people who are donor conceived now who were adults and they're speaking out and they've found out through DNA tests or they've found out in a family argument or and the impact that then has on them and their identity is huge. And so I've always been a big advocate for talking and talking early. And that's what I also try to show is that, yeah, these conversations can be quite scary and emotional because you're having to kind of bring back something that was very difficult. But for your child, it's the right thing for them to always know.
Yeah, oh, I saw your reel that you did the other day.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So she's Emma.
Really, really good. So she's donor conceived.
Yes.
And I thought it was really, really good because you were talking about just that. Like, when should we start talking about it? And you're like, as soon as possible, because that just makes it normal. And it also makes these conversations less scary the sooner you have them. And let's face it, like when they're really young, you can sort of fob them off with answers. If you think, shit, I don't know how I'm going to answer that one yet. Let me have a think about it. Let's talk about that tonight. Once they've gone to bed, how are we going to manage that? And, but the older they get, the more switched on they are and they're going to see that. So if you start it early, it's got to make it more natural, isn't it?
But also when you start a conversation with a child early, it becomes part of their normal narrative.
Yeah,
exactly.
And they don't, like kids that have two mums or two dads or stuff, that is their normal. Mm. And if you can create that as part of their normal, then they're going to be so much more well-equipped to deal with anything that comes their way because that is their normal. And that's a lot to be said for that. And I think if we can all normalize these things from an early age, like IVF, donor conception, adoption, then all these kids are going to go to school together talking in a normal way about their norm, the normal way that they came to be in this world. And wouldn't that be an incredible place to be? Because I guarantee in every class at every school, there is a child, for example, who is conceived through IVF.
Yeah.
Or a child who was, you know, whose parents had a lot of miscarriages or, you know, it's so popular. I was going to say, no, that's definitely not
more
the right
common.
Word. Common. That's the one. It's so common and so important that these kids grow up knowing that's okay to be, because it's not even that different anymore. That's the thing.
No, but if you think about when we were younger, IVF was this weird, like, thing, wasn't it? And that's pretty normal now. I don't think it has the same sort of
connotation,
like taboo to it as it did back then. And hopefully it will be the same for all of the other ways but it needs to happen sooner rather than later, doesn't it?
Well, definitely. And it's actually one of the very first things I said when I started sharing my story was I want our girls to grow up in a world where they can talk about their story and they're not met with people going, what? So mums, it's not your mum's eggs or however. And they can reel it off. I mean, Mila's now 5 and my twins, Esker and Lena, are 3. And if you ask them how they were made, they will say that mummy's eggs were broken. And so we needed to have some eggs from a lady donor or lady donut as my she calls it lady donut and they were put with daddy's seed and mummy carried them in their tummy and that's how they are who they are today, and that will evolve over time. So my eldest has got the most beautiful curls and I wrote about this just recently, and there's no curls in Matt's side of the family at all, so we are pretty sure that comes from our donor. And if you'd have said to me at the very beginning that there would be a really obvious feature from that lady giving us the eggs, and as much as I have always been incredibly grateful for her, I had feelings of feeling threatened, jealousy that they'll share that with our child and I won't. And I would have really worried about kind of seeing someone else in my children, but I don't. I see them for who they are and I love them for who they are. And one of the things that I hear from the donor conceived community as well is things like celebrate all of your child. Don't just pick up on the bits where they're like you. They've got to love themselves and that is a part of them. So I always tell her how beautiful her curls are and I absolutely adore them. So it's one of these things that I wish I'd have known at the very beginning and I think it helps people to see how you grow around it. You learn, yeah. You grow, and you grow more comfortable, I think, with it as well. I know now that I cannot be replaced. And I think that's a big fear. That
huge.
One day they'll go, you're not my real mum. I'm going to go and find this person who is technically their genetic parent. And that's a difficult thing to get your head around, particularly because the narrative I think you have generally from the fertility industry is that, look, it's just another part of the medical process and then off you go. And I think it's that longer term view that we need to help us to support them as they ask questions in the future.
Are they like these fertility clinics? Is this the norm going forward? Or is there something happening that's going to change that sort of that process?
The UK is much further forward than a lot of other countries. So if we think about the types of donors you can use over here, you cannot use a fully anonymous donor anymore. And that was abolished a few years ago now. But the donors you use over here are contactable at the age of 18. So the child can then choose to make contact and find out who that person is. And that's all registered through the HFEA and everything like that. Where we went abroad, we went to the Czech Republic, it's very different. So it is fully anonymous. And so we have a basic criteria, like kind of matched to me. So eye colour, hair colour, height, weight, college education, I know, and her age, that's it. And at the time I was quite comfortable with that because I think it gave me that kind of distance. Everyone's different with this. So some people want to know absolutely everything they can know and will want to see photos and will want all of the information. Some people will kind of be more comfortable with the bare minimum. Now I found, and this is one of the things I reflect on, that over the past, 5 years that I've been parenting, I've actually realized that in a way I've taken away that choice from the girls by using a fully anonymous donor, that if they want to know who that person is, not to replace me as their mum, but to know more about their own genetic origins and who they are, that's going to be a lot more difficult. But nowadays with DNA testing and the advances in that, my hope is that if they do want to know more, we can kind of do it as a journey together, and we can kind of explore their heritage and maybe find someone through that. But it's all of these different things that you don't think about at the very beginning. You are so focused on having a baby.
I think also, to give everyone credit for decision making process, and I love this expression, you do the best you can with the information that you have at the time, right? Totally. And that is there's a big weight and a lot of value in that, because no one, you know, talking about us normal sort of sane-ish people, no one sets out to cause anyone else pain or heartache or damage or anything like that. So we're all just doing the best we can with the information that we had at the time. And if more people realise that about decisions, you know, we'd be in a much better place socially, wouldn't we? Let's be honest. But I think it's easy to be hard on ourselves and to look back and have regrets and sort of hold that resentment for ourselves, which just eats away at you, when actually we're all just fucking trying to, you know, get on and do our best.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I say, we need to be kind to ourselves in this, because like you say, we do what we can with the information that we have. And I mean, I also really struggle with the fact that I know this now and I would want them to have that choice to find that person. Yeah, if I hadn't have made that decision, I wouldn't have them. So it's not that I regret the decision I made. I just regret the implication of it. So it's really complex. And for some people, there are barriers there financially, time scales and things, where it leads them to a route that is their only choice in a way. And so the ethical things that come up around it can really, really complicate it. And again, you've not got that counselling or provision there for that emotional support, because I think I said before that you are so vulnerable when you're making these decisions. We were on the back of 5 failed IVF cycles and a miscarriage, and the thought of, well, I'd been on the waiting list for a long while in the UK and I was getting no nearer the top. I mean, it's got a lot better in the UK. You did not having to wait as long as you were sort of 6-7 years ago, but that led us to going abroad, because I could not face the thought of having another year of feeling like I wasn't moving forward. So I think, we do need to be kind to ourselves. And it's kind of partly why I share now, because I think particularly online, things can be quite unkind. And there can be a lot of shaming of people who have made these decisions. I've had some really difficult run-ins on social media around the fact that we use an anonymous donor, and have nearly quit doing what I'm doing because it hits you, right? I mean, it's talking about your children, and it's really, really difficult. And I have people coming to me where they've suddenly read something online and they suddenly are terrified that they've traumatized their child in some way. And this is why I try to share through conversation, and it's about knowing the context and trying to maintain perspective on your own family as well, but learning and applying what you can, but also having that trust in yourself as a parent that you are trying to give them everything that they need, and also just understanding that if they need to know more about that person, that it's no reflection on how they feel about you. It's the natural curiosity that they have.
I think that as you say, like the jealousy involved, it's something I think about a lot when we talk about surrogates and donor conceptions and stuff. And one thing that I would always find interesting or horrible for me, just as someone that hasn't had to go down that route, is would I be jealous that in effect another woman has had a child with my husband? Like, did that come up for you, or does it come up within the donor conception world?
I think people do worry about that, and I've heard of people where they've made the decision with their husbands, or they've had the conversations where they say, well, if you get to share the genetic, why don't we both not, and we use double donation even? And people do consider that. And for me, I think I always felt comfort that they would have that genetic connection with one half of their family and with Matt, and he's always been brilliant about it and is totally supportive and on board with kind of how I tell them, how we tell them, and he doesn't see it as an issue anymore. To say he had such a big kind of issue with it at the beginning, I think for him it was a grieving process as well, and he had to grieve the loss of the child that he had imagined we'd have together. And I think for me, I find comfort in the fact that they've got that link, and they do look like their dad. They really do.
They do, don't they?
They definitely do. although I would still say at times where he'll be like looking at Esker in particular, and he'll go, oh, Esker, you just got my eyes, because they've got the same sort of colouring around the centre of their eyes. And I still feel that little pang of, I won't ever get to have that in a way and see myself in that way. But it gets easier. And I think it's also about, it's these coexisting feelings that you can have. You can be so happy and so grateful and wouldn't want to change anything, yet you can still feel sad about
what you can.
How, and actually it shifted for me. I've gone from grieving and wanting to have a child that resembles me in some way and have that genetic connection with me, to more, I don't know, even know whether this makes sense, but now I grieve the fact that I don't resemble them, or I've not got that link with them. So it's kind of, it shifts in a way. Does that make sense?
Like you say, you have the resemblance in other ways, don't you?
We do. Yeah.
It's the nature nurture thing, isn't it? Yeah. There's so much to be said for the way that children are brought up and the environment they're in. And as you say, mannerisms. Like my oldest two children are my husband. He is not their dad. Mm-hmm. And my son says things the way that Rob says things, and because they're around him so much of the time. We have a great relationship with their dad as well. He's not out of the picture. But it's that kind of, it all these things don't matter. They don't matter. If your child is loved and your child is looked after and feels secure in where they are, then that is all that matters. And they'll end up picking up bits of everyone and their school, and as people we are a bundle of our experiences and our schooling and our parents and our people that we knew as children and all the people that it took to sort of bring us up and stuff. And that actually genetics does obviously play a part, but not as big a part as we probably think to start with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And society places this huge emphasis on, I mean, the fact that when you've got a newborn, the most common question you get is, oh, who do they most look like? And that's a
An alien.
Yeah, it's like they look like themselves is the best way to answer that.
Yeah,
don't a bit like a goblin.
Deflect.
Actually, goblin-like, aren't they? Yeah.
Like Benjamin Button.
Yeah, exactly. Oh
no, but I think what you say is right. It's genetics are important, but they're not important for love, and there is so much more that goes around that, and stuff that you don't even realize in the way you were brought up and the people who influenced you who weren't genetically related to you. And yeah, we just have this, it's like this notion that's ingrained in our minds that this is what a family is. And like you said earlier, we're I think today compared to when I was at school, there's so many different types of families about, and there's much more conversation. And I think people often worry about, oh, when my child goes to school, are they going to be picked on for this? But I think we're almost imagining it in the day and age that we were at school, where it was really uncommon for there to be a different type of family. And now, yeah, like you say, there's two mums, two dads, solo mums, and so many different types of families. And that's one of the things I do as well with the conversations with the girls. We don't just talk about how our story is different. We talk about how all families are different, and it's putting it into context for them as, look, yeah, there are some slight unique traits to our family in comparison with your friends, but everyone's different. The most important thing is we love each other. And
absolutely. And I think we're so it's so common that we go in with our own heads full of our own kind of egos and worries and anxieties and stuff, and we think, oh, everyone's going to be judging us, but actually everyone's got their own shit to deal with as well. So no one's going into a situation focusing on what other people are doing. Everyone's going in there scared that they're, you know, I think everyone is ultimately scared that they're going to be found out to be this big imposter of what they're doing. And so we're all just going in like, oh, please keep your head down and just don't look at me in some ways.
Yeah.
And actually, don't worry about what anyone else thinks, because everyone else is too busy thinking about themselves to care about you.
Yeah. I remember when I had Mila as a newborn, and you know what it's like, those early days where you don't know what you're doing, really. You're just fumbling along. And I went to a baby group, and I was so worried that people would be able to see that we weren't genetically related. I just had this, and this was really early days, really vulnerable, new mom, kind of worried about bonding, and all of these fears I had were like manifesting and coming out in this. And I remember being there, and I wasn't feeling that way because she was from another lady's egg. It was because I was a new mom and I was finding my way, and I felt like an imposter, but I didn't realize that they probably all felt exactly the same for slightly different reasons. And nobody did notice. They just saw a mom looking after her child. And quite often our own thoughts and feelings can really influence how we approach situations, and definitely the fears around attachment and bonding are so great when you're using donor eggs, because I remember worrying that they would have some kind of sixth sense that I wasn't genetically connected with them, and that they would cry for me and settle for Matt, and that wasn't the case at all.
It's because, real though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's real. These worries are real. But I bet when you look at it now, as you know, you've grown so much and you've also reached out within this community and obviously made so many connections and stuff and had these same conversations, but I bet when you look back now, you're like, that was batshit crazy behavior.
It was, completely.
But it's so real when you have these anxieties about anything. They are so real and frightening at the time, aren't they? That you have, they have to be recognized and validated as well.
Yeah. Even through pregnancy, that was a really strange time as well, because suddenly it didn't feel real after that long. You know, that you feel like an imposter anyway. And I remember I didn't feel like I could voice these thoughts that I was having, because I felt wrong for feeling it. But I was worried, I was thinking, well, what if they come out like looking really odd, really different, and it being really, really obvious? And I kept thinking to myself, Becky, stop being, that's just so like shallow. Like, and I knew I was going to love my baby. I felt this connection as I could feel her moving around. I mean, actually, we didn't find out what we were having because we kind of wanted that surprise, but things changed. And I mean, I've had guest speakers speak on Paths to Parenthood about these different feelings and thoughts we have. And you learn that it's a process of attachment over time. It's not just this one moment of suddenly, that's my baby. And there's just all these little niggling things that can crop up when you've used a donor, but that I think most people wouldn't really relate to because it's a different type of situation, really.
Yeah, I think also when you like what something I found in my pregnancies is that I had a major fear that I wouldn't be able to love this baby as much as I love my you know the baby that my second baby. I was like, I don't know, and I was like, this is a horrible mistake because there's no what might like I, there's no way I can love this, but I've got so much love for my son, there's no way I can do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. And that I've spoken about that before. And that's a really common thing as well. Just this, we cannot fathom this love. And I imagine that is sort of tenfold with this because you must have the shit. What if instinctively, you know, you said earlier, what if my kids have this sixth sense that I'm not their mum? What if I instinctively don't feel that this is my child? What if I get, what is it called?
Postnatal depression.
What if I get that and I reject this child? And that must have been a real fear, or it must be a real fear for people going through this sort of thing.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I remember I was worried I had postnatal depression. I didn't, but you know the baby blues you get. Mm-hmm. And I was I remember it was about 3 weeks in sobbing to the midwife, and I'd explained everything to her, and I remember saying to my mum, I think it's because I'm not bonding. And the midwife just said, look, this is normal, and you all these hormones are flooding through, and you're obviously going to have these feelings. And it did it cleared up over a few weeks, and I was fine. Mm. But I lost my nan as well a couple of weeks after Mila was born, so it was a really difficult time anyway. Who I'd always been really really close to, and so I think we hang our hat on the fact that we're having these feelings because they're donor conceived, when actually
just hormone
emotion. Yeah. It's typical mum feelings that we then kind of associate with the fact that we've used a donor, really, rather than the fact that it is kind of that transition into becoming a mum.
Becky, tell us a bit about Paths to Parenthood then. So for people who are considering donor conception, Paths to Parenthood is where they should go, isn't it?
Yes. Well, I've basically tried to create everything that I would have wanted and needed back then that still I don't think really exists. And it's for anyone who's either thinking about starting it or parenting now. So the community is full of people at different stages of the journey. But I launched it in September 2020. So it was a bit of a lockdown project, really. And basically what I wanted to do was bring in professionals and experts to talk about these things that I've just been talking about. So I host a webinar every month on a different topic. And you would think by now I'd run out of topics, but I haven't, because there are so many different angles to this. So last month we talked about mixed families. And so someone who may already have a child and then have secondary infertility, needed to use a donor, and the complexities that come with that. And then also I host a monthly live chat, which is kind of a little bit like this, really. I chat with somebody who has been down this path, and we've covered solo motherhood, we've covered two mums, we've covered many stories of egg donation, sperm donation. We've had men sharing their perspective as well, because it's so often not talked about. And then also the perspective of those who are donor conceived. So I try and bring donor conceived adults in to share their experience and then take from it what we can learn as parents. And there's also a community hub, so it's all away from social media, on a private app, and people have made some really amazing connections. It's just lovely to see the questions and that are asked, and the support that people give. And then I host virtual support groups as well every month to kind of help people through that. So it's a space where they can go and they can find, they can explore, they can think about, okay, this is one of my fears. I know that I'm not alone, but let's understand it a little bit better. So, and the feedback has been amazing. And it's always scary when you launch something new. You think, is it going to be what they need? It's just
always evolving, isn't it?
Yeah,
you create what people need, because you see the gaps that are missing, and really really wonderful resource for people.
Thank you. And my hope it will continue to grow, and we've got over 350 members all over the world now, and we're hosting sessions at different times of day so everyone can try and come along
Have there been any in real life meetups? Have you, we get people messaging us
Yes.
up for a coffee and sending us selfies and things like that. And that's amazing because
love
we
it.
Started in
love
lockdown
so
as well.
Much.
And for such a long time, no one could really connect in real life. But
yeah,
it's fab seeing those pictures.
It is. It is. It's amazing. There's been a couple in Australia who have met up, some in Canada. And
yeah.
I've had two organised events for meeting in a picnic last year, you know, when we could actually start seeing people again. And both were rained off. So hopefully this year it will happen when we get into the spring. But yeah, it's amazing just to see the there's people who just go out on walks together and are pregnant together and are going through this, but knowing they're not on their own and they feel like they're preparing themselves in the best way to then parent their child through this. Because like I said, you've not got, there's no handbook out there and there's no sort of support package for people as they hit different milestones. I mean, I really struggled when Mila started school and it hit me like out of nowhere. And I was speaking to Julianne, who's one of my speakers, and she said, look, this is probably a bit of a resurgence of the grief and you're having to let her go a little bit into the big wide world.
And worried about questions that might be asked at school? Or...
Yeah, I don't know whether I was that worried about it. I think it was more about the fact that I would miss her because I was so close. But yeah, maybe a little bit. She's always known her story and it's never really come up for her, I don't think. But I had the conversation with the teacher, which is another conversation we've had on Paths to Parent Hub. And just in case she started talking about someone else's eggs or I know how babies are made and someone, I don't want her to be ever met with someone going, like what?
I know, kids are so funny, the stuff they come out with. I guess if the teacher's prepared for what she's talking about, then
that's it. And that's quite a scary conversation to have because you do feel, but teachers nowadays they know so many different stories and they I've done it twice now and they've been amazing. But yeah, it is something that it's not a one-time decision. It's something that is, well, it's not just your story either, it becomes their story, and that's I think the bit that often isn't shared when people are just starting to look at this. Because I think, let's face it, when you're going through such trauma to have a baby and difficult times, you find it hard to look far ahead because you don't want to jinx it or hope too much. Yeah. And so I always try and say to people, look, try and imagine yourself with this child and having that conversation. And I remember at the beginning, I couldn't get past having that positive pregnancy test at first. And it's like every step, but it's important to start kind of thinking about these things and preparing yourself because... Yeah, doing it in the early days allows you to practice and practice saying it out loud, which is so important to becoming comfortable with it so that you can share with them.
It's so interesting, isn't it? It's all, you know, we're talking about how much there is behind the doors of this community, if you like. And I just find it all, I'm still blown away by the stories of other people and inspired by people like yourself who kind of want to make it easier for the next person, because it is I can only imagine it must be a really fucking frightening place to be at times.
Yeah and lonely, and that's kind of what I really feel has changed just through Instagram over the last few years. It's,
do you get a bit defensive when people moan about Instagram, you know, people who just use it for pictures of their breakfast, for example, and they go, oh, it's not very nice, or it's rubbish, or it's stupid, or whatever. I'm like, actually, it's bloody wonderful.
Yeah,
it is bloody wonderful.
Following the wrong people.
When people use the word influencer as well, and I remember someone saying to me once, who I didn't really know very much, was like, oh, so you're an influencer. I was like, well, but influencing on something really important to people, and not, I'm not sharing
being a wanker
down the high street. And I'm yeah, it's a message. And I find Instagram a brilliant tool for connecting with people. I didn't know what I was doing at first, but now I kind of feel like I've got my groove and I've not really branched out onto anything else, to be honest. And people are saying, have you gone on TikTok? And no. I don't. I'm
we didn't like it. If someone called us influencers as well, and we weren't happy with that. So, but someone else called us thought leaders.
Which I like that.
We are entirely happy with. So go with thought leader.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. An advocate.
Rather than Insta wanker.
Yeah. Douche. Oh, Becky, thank you so much for joining us. It's been absolutely amazing to kind of have that proper chat that we've been skirting around for such a long time.
And no, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, so I hope I've not talked too much. I could talk for hours.
No, it's fascinating. It's brilliant.
And it will definitely be really helpful to lots of people, and we will point them in your direction. So all your details and links and things in the show notes.
Fabulous. Thank you, ladies. It's been a
lovely.
Pleasure.
No, not at all.
Enjoy the rest
Keep
of the
day. Keep in touch.
Yeah. Thank you.
We'll speak soon.
Take
Bye.
Care.
Bye. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. And please, please, when you have a second, rate us, review us and share us. And let's get this taboo smashed. See you next week.